for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 349 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Alexander Bankida, the creator of Captives and Champions of Earth, among other things, and we're going to talk about some of his new projects, ones that have happened since the last time I interviewed him. That will include Headless Horseman, Killer Bowl, which he's working with the author of Roger Rabbit, creator Gary Wolf, and a few other projects that he's working on as well. Alex is always a fun guy to talk with, and so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he's got to tell us, which includes some great things about the comics industry itself. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome back to the podcast Alexander Bankida, the creator of many good books that I really enjoyed, including Captives and Champions of Earth, which we talked about last time that you were on the podcast. Now you got some new stuff that we can read. So how's it going, Alex?
It's going really well. I'm very happy to be back. I liked the show a lot last time I was on it. So
Great. Now, we got a bunch of new things to talk about. Let's talk about the easiest one first. Let's talk about Captives. You got issue number 4 of Captives out. And as I understand it, this is on Comixology now?
Yep. So what's nice is, I think last time I was on the show, nothing I had was on Comixology. And now four issues of Captives is on Comixology. And then every issue of Champions of Earth, and then another one-shot I just put out is also on there of a different title. So.
Okay, talk about your. This is issue 4 of Captives. How many issues are there going to be in Captives?
I want it to be an ongoing series, but as of right now, there's 7 that are done.
Okay.
So, I mean, the other ones need to be lettered, but all the artwork's done.
Oh, wow. I like the story. Why don't you give people a basic summary of what Captives is about, since it's been a little while since we talked.
Captives, in a nutshell, is basically about a group of people who kind of enter into this labyrinth all for different reasons. So there's kind of this legendary labyrinth, and every year the door opens and people go inside and then nobody ever comes out. So this, you know, this story follows, a series of characters, and they all go inside the labyrinth. And once they go inside the labyrinth, they begin to realize that a lot of the kind of rules of nature don't really apply in there, and nobody really fully understands how it works. And I kind of feel like the way I write that story is a little bit of a combination of Sword and Sorcery meets the Twilight Zone, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's probably my nutshell of Captives.
Cool, because I like the art. Who does the art in that book?
Oh, yeah, art's fantastic. Robert Ahmad. Mm-hmm. It's really good.
Yeah, I love the storytelling in it, and I'm glad that you've got number 4 done. I think the last time I talked with you, I think 3 was done.
It was 3, yep. And then, and it's inked by Dan Parsons. Mm-hmm. Issues 1-4 is inked by Dan Parsons. I actually bring on another inker, issue 5. Mm. But yeah, Dan Parsons, he did a bunch of Star Wars books. He's a great guy. He's been in the industry forever. He's awesome.
Cool. Now, okay, so that's out now. If you want to get all 4, you can get them on Comixology, which is good. Any ideas to when 5-7 are going to come out? Now, you said it's in the process of lettering.
Yeah, so issue 5, I'm probably going to have that one submitted to Comixology, and I want to say maybe a month.
Okay.
So if that's the case, I think it takes about 4 to 6 weeks for Comixology to put books up. So just, let's say, 2.5 months, and then probably issue 6, maybe another 2.5-3 months after that, and kind of want to space them out.
Okay.
You know, but yeah.
Great, nice. So, of course, the next book will be out around Christmas, which is a good time for that.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That'd be a great time.
Somebody gives a Comixology card or something like that.
Well, it'd be an Amazon gift card would work fine.
So you can do all that. That'd be a good thing to get to somebody.
Some Captives for Christmas. Look at that. You know, I like that. Right. That sounds good. Captives for Christmas. I'm gonna start using that.
Yeah, I would. I would for sure, because that's going to be good. And then, that'll be Valentine's, and that'll be around Easter for the last ones. So you're scheduling.
Captives. That's a romantic book. Any totally perfect gift.
And you planned it this way. You wanted it to come out around a holiday every time.
Let's do that. That's right. I did plan it. Totally. That was my idea from the beginning.
Of course, that last one, if you wait a little while, you could get out on Free Comic Book Day.
That's true. Beginning actually, May. You know, I should think about that. That's a good idea.
So anyway, that's a good thing for that. I think about these things because I think that it's important to get them out at certain times.
You know, you're right. You're right. That's totally a good idea.
So I love the book Captives. I'm glad you're making progress on it. Talk to me about, before we dive into the new stuff, the Champions of Earth. Have you wrapped that series up?
Well, the first four issues, that's the whole thing. Mm-hmm. Well, it's three issues on Comixology. The last issue is a double issue.
Oh.
But yeah, it's all wrapped up. We're working on a sequel. It's kind of like a tentative project that's floating around. I actually started drawing it, but I'm always so busy. I don't think I'm going to be finishing that book. I might draw maybe 5 or 6 pages of it and then just have somebody else finish it. But no, we've already written the script and plotted it out. So there might be more Champions of Earth. I don't know. You know, somebody out there really wants it. Just let me know. But I love working on that book. It's so much fun to it. So you know what's actually interesting now is that I feel like in the past it used to actually be really hard to enter into the superhero genre in comics. But now I feel like Marvel and DC books are getting pretty I'm trying to find a word for it, but like I want to use the word they're floating away, I feel like, from what a superhero book is about. And it's not that my book is about what a superhero book's about, but I feel like a lot of people are just slowly becoming unhappy with Marvel and DC and the comic book industry. And I'm like, well, great. Then now it's easier to sell superhero books that aren't Marvel and DC.
Well, this is why I think indie comics are doing so well, is because it's something new and different and unique. You can do things in an indie book that they can't do in Marvel and DC.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. So I'm pretty excited. I like working in superheroes a lot. I like approaching it from kind of a different angle. But yeah, no, Champions of Earth, that's somebody could read the whole thing. You know, it's a full story beginning to end on Comixology now. And each issue is $1. The last issue is $2 because it's a double-sized issue. But you can get each issue you can get the whole series for $4.
Okay. I don't think I got that third issue as a double issue. I think I want to get that. I remember I think I got 1 and 2, and I already got the other one we're going to talk about. I'll have to go back out to Comixology and get that. In fact, I don't know. You go and talk a little bit more about – give a summary of what Champions of Earth is about. Why don't you?
Champions of Earth in a nutshell is basically about these two teenagers get superpowers by accident. And then what ends up happening is they go on a crime spree and they unintentionally frame real superheroes for their crime. So these real superheroes get thrown into jail. And then in their absence, these teenagers get an agent and they become these like superhero celebrities basically. And they replace the old superheroes. And then the old superheroes are obviously unhappy about this and they want to bring them to justice. So they try to do that. But the problem is the public no longer likes them, and that's kind of the joke. So the public basically replaces them with these, you know, kind of like pop star equivalent of superheroes. I used to joke around and tell people they're like the reality TV show version of superheroes.
Yeah, I remember that. That's a good way to describe it. There we are. I see you right there. Let me get number 3. I did get number 3. I have that. I don't know why I'm thinking. Was that different? Did you do a print version that didn't have number 4 in it?
I did do a print version. Okay. Yeah. Well, I have a print version. There's only 3 issues that are in print for Champions of Earth. The print version is also a double issue. So.
Oh, then maybe I've got it already. Okay, so I won't worry about it then. But I I do love the book. I thought that was if you're talking about people who want to see that, I'd like to see more of that book. To be honest.
Yeah, it's a fun one. What's nice about it too. It was actually the first book I ever really put together. The book was a learning project. I was certainly learning kind of how to actually get a comic done and all the kind of not fun stuff of making a comic.
Deadlines. But, all those kinds of coordination of things. Yep.
Deadlines, getting the, we weren't really on a deadline, which was helpful, but it was just kind of getting the book done, hiring artists, actually doing the production of it. You know, it really was a pretty kind of good way to learn what to do and what not to do when making a comic book.
Oh yeah. Okay, now I've got it. I went ahead and bought it, and
thank you.
Book. I like your books, of course. The one we're going to talk about was only 99 cents. This one was a whole $2. So I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, that's a double issue, you know.
Yeah. So that's you know, most books I buy now are 4, and Marvel's talking about going to $5 or $6.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
Comics. Ooh. So
sweet.
This is a good thing. Now, the one thing I do want to ask you about, because I noticed that you tend to do black and white in all your comics.
I do. I like black and white. I'm going to have to start go ahead.
Is it a creative choice, or is it a financial choice, or a little bit of both? Why is that the case?
It's a creative choice, but I'm going to have to probably start to shy away from it. I like it a lot personally, but I find a lot of people do like colored books.
Yeah.
So I'm probably going to start branching out away from that slowly. I mean, we'll see. Captives, so far, all the other issues are black and white.
Right.
I have no plan on coloring them.
Right.
But I think going forward, I'm probably going to start coloring my books more.
Oh, really?
I will see. I don't know. I'm very much about the black and white books, but it seems like fans and some other people, you know, like, oh, where's the color? Yeah. So I might do both. We'll see. But I love black and white books. Especially, this is going to sound, I think this is obvious, but it seems like it's not so much anymore. I always feel like black and white books have a very independent comic book look to them.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the point. Like, whenever I think of independent comics or stuff like that, I think black and white. And, you know, I always liked that look. I thought it was interesting. And also, I read a lot of manga, so I also like black and white books from there as well. So I don't know, but we'll see.
Okay, well, I have to tell you, I'm now looking through issues 3 and 4, and I have not had number 4. So I've got something to read when we get done here.
There you go.
Looking forward to it. So I'll get a whole nother, it'll scratch that Champions of Earth itch for me for a little while.
Yeah, there you go. You got that itch to scratch, you know. And all your listeners, you can scratch that itch if it's starting to form. You know, you just go to Comixology.
There's like that tingle on there somewhere where you got to do
tingle,
that.
Yeah, you're Go ahead.
You got to do that. So that's so. Anyway, I'm really happy about that. That'll satisfy me for a little while. But when you do get new Champions of Earth going, if you get the chance, I'd certainly like to. We'll talk some more about that the next time because I like that.
Yes, definitely.
Great stuff. So, okay, we talked about Captives. We talked about Champions of Earth. Let's talk about these other projects that you've got. Let's go to the one that's available on Comixology right now.
So Hard Tales.
Yes.
Okay, so Hard Tales is a book. It's a one-shot. It's a self-contained story. It's 27 pages of internal artwork, so you get a good amount of story out of it. And basically, it's such a funny book to describe to people. It's a fairy tales meets film noir detective meets comedy book.
Mm-hmm.
And this book is basically about what if, you know, The Three Little Pigs was kind of told as a film noir, you know, crime drama, but mm-hmm. handled in a very comedic way. That's what that book is about.
Because it's a funny story. When you took it to me, you sent me a link to where it's available. Of course, this is black and white. I like it. You tell me say to what you were telling me about it. And I don't know if there's something you want people to know about the main character, the detective.
I describe him as consistently inconsistent. He will say one thing and literally the next panel he'll contradict himself. And I think part of the reason why I was very interested in writing a detective story like that is that not only is it funny, it keeps the reader on their toes. Like, you really don't know where the story's going because it's all over the place. there'll be scenes in there that you think are related to the plot, but they're really not. Or you think the story's going one way, but then it dramatically just goes the other way. I remember when I wrote the script, after doing it, I thought to myself, is this going to work? Because I think this is funny. I think this is an interesting way to write kind of a detective story. Mm-hmm. And I remember showing it. I don't know if people do this who are creators out there, but I like to show books I work on that I think are a little off to people who don't read comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And not only don't read comic books, tend to watch kind of normal stuff that you would watch on TV, you know, whatever the popular show is, the popular movie, and I'll show it to them. And I remember showing it to my sister-in-law, and she's reading it, and she goes, this is really good.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking, oh, she's just being polite. And then she starts explaining to me why she really likes it. And I went, oh, like she just said, oh, it really works, and the story ties up really well, and this and this. And I said, okay, so maybe I did do a good job as a writer. But Hard Tales is probably the most self-interested, I don't want to use that word, but something I thought was really funny,
mm-hmm.
and I really enjoyed, and I made it without considering how other people would react to it. So
sometimes you got to do that. I mean, you know, you're not the only person who's going to have that sense of humor, so there's going to be other people out there who are going to enjoy it.
Well, of course, but you don't know that when you're writing it, right?
No, of course not. I mean, you might be the only one that gets the joke, but I don't think that's true anymore. I think we've got such a variety of humor and senses of humor and stuff that I think it's not. Let me read the description that says out on Comixology because I kind of like it. It outlines a little of this. Hard Tales : Three Pigs in a Blanket. Oddball detective Rock Hammer, which is a funny name for a detective,
great name.
teaches his new rookie partner the ropes while investigating the case of a missing pig and the whereabouts of the big bad wolf, which right away lets you know.
There it is. Yeah, it's a fun one. And I think one thing I took away from writing that was I just kind of used what you learn and kind of how to write a story. Mm-hmm. And I said, look, as long as the story is solid and mm-hmm. it works, mm-hmm. it should still work, even though there's a lot of things in it that are a little weird or different. And I feel like it succeeded in that area, but I haven't gotten – I know this book's getting reviewed right now, actually. So I'm curious to see what the review is going to be like on mm-hmm. it from this morning. Mm-hmm.
But you know what? If we do the same things all the time in comics, I think we're in trouble. I wrote a column at the website about the fact that, you know, sometimes we don't get the big picture. And I was talking about two things that was going on. The Captain Marvel trailer came out. And all these people came out and said, why is she so stolid? Why is she so, you know, she doesn't crack a smile ever. She just sits looking at people. And I said, well, maybe there's going to be character development. Maybe she's going to develop that character.
Right. I mean, it's too early to tell. You really don't know.
Yeah. And then the other thing I talked about was the Batman Damned, which nobody's talking about the story. Everybody's talking about the one picture in the book in which Bruce Wayne shows his manhood, shall we say.
Oh, okay. I don't even know about this.
Yeah, and that, this is what all these people... I was at a bookstore in New York, and what were they talking about? His manhood. Online, my friends are all talking about his manhood, and I'm going...
Wait, is it censored?
No, it's not censored. It's flat out... It's there for the whole world. The panel is darker as far as that goes, but it's clearly there.
Well,
and
let's be honest with ourselves. Mm-hmm. What else? You know, there's so many Batman stories out there. Mm-hmm. What can Batman do now to be different at this point? Yeah. He's just going to have to start doing that. That's the new direction. Well,
the story is about supposedly the Joker's dead.
Okay, and so.
That's the basic story, and to me, this is the story that people who like me, who are Batman fans, have wanted to see for decades. We wanted to see what happens, and at the beginning, we're a little uncertain as to whether Batman did it or not, but I have a feeling he did. And so, for me, I'm like, you know, this is a great story. Why are we worrying about his junk? I mean, come on. You know, I mean, there's this. It's a great thing. So, but see, this is like with your book. I think it's time for different stories. I think it's time to do stuff maybe that you would like and maybe you don't know if other people are going to like. But let's put those out there and see what happens.
Well, that's the kind of thing that's amazing about making comics is that you really can just do it. Mm-hmm. And especially now with Comixology, and which is such a big platform, anybody with a phone right now could buy my books.
Yep.
They don't even have to go to a store. They don't have to do anything. They can just go on Comixology, and Amazon owns the company now, which makes it even easier. You don't even need to set up an account. Mm-hmm. You just link it to your Amazon account. You don't have to do that anymore, actually. They changed that recently. Mm-hmm. You just sign in with your Amazon account, and you buy books. So now as a result of that, you know, it's as a creator, as an independent creator, if you have an idea, you can just go, well, I'm just going to do it. Just put it out there. And,
of course.
You know, making a comic book is certainly not easy, but it's not as complicated or as hard as making, you know, a movie or something like that. So the amount of – it really just costs time and energy. Of course, it costs money, but it's nothing crazy. So, you know, I think because of that, to me, if you have an idea that you like and you think it works and you notice that other people haven't really been doing it, or if they've been doing it, they've been doing it differently, just make it and see what happens.
That's right. That's exactly what I think. I think that – people are too afraid to take chances. You know, we don't have to write all Batman stories. We don't have to write all Captain Marvel stories. We can do other stories. The New York City would have been rebuilt three times over if everything that happened to Marvel Comics really happened to the city.
That's true.
So for me, I'm going like, you know, I want something else. I want to see something different. I don't want to see the same old stuff. This is one of the reasons I like Champions Earth so much, is because it's a very unique take on the superhero genre, which I like because, you know, I've read superhero stuff for decades, and I'm ready to see something new. So I like it. I think it's a great book. This is the same thing, I think, with the other one. It's a take on fairy tales.
Right.
And, you know, now the interesting thing, of course, you got the instead of making movies, you don't have to have like a CGI Big Bad Wolf or a pig or other stuff like
just
that.
Throw them in there.
That's right. You've got an unlimited special effects budget.
That's one of the best things about making comics, mm-hmm. and it's one of my favorite things about it is that you really don't have to worry about what's that scene going to cost to make. Well, if you can draw it, it's there, right? And it's nice because it's a visual component. You know, if you're a writer who just writes novels, which is great, but it's not you when you have a visual of something that you could think up in your head and then see it, you know, put on a page. It's just something so nice about that in comics. So for me, anybody who's actually just a very creative person and wants to make different forms of art, to me, comics is one of the best kind of storytelling mediums to just do whatever you want. It's great. So that's really why I've fallen in love with doing it. And I find it, I keep doing it. I just always want to come up with new ideas. And it'd be cool if somebody did this or this. And I don't know. It's such a great medium for that. And it's kind of now with Comixology, for me, it just changed the game completely. I love the fact there's so much. You have access to – anybody has access to it now. And I remember I'll meet random people sometimes and I'll talk about my books and they'll go, oh, where can I get them? I'm like, just open your phone and do this. But back in the day, you know, say you meet somebody at a party and let's say it was 10, 15 years ago. You meet somebody at a party. Yeah, I got my books out at a comic book store. Oh, okay, now they have to go to a comic book store, which they're not going to do at that point. They're going to forget, even if they want to. And then they have to go to the store and they have to hope the book's in stock and all this kind of stuff. It's just, it's so different. It's just great. It's fantastic.
It's wonderful stuff. Well, it gives creators like you an option that they didn't have before.
Oh, it's awesome. Yeah, exactly.
Super duper. I love that because that about now. Another good thing about this, the Three Pigs book, is that it's self-contained. There's no.
It is self-contained. Yeah.
How often does that happen these days?
That's right. That was a challenge to write, actually.
Oh, really?
All right, I'm gonna nail it all in one shot.
Oh, really? Yeah. How did you adapt to that? Did you have to do something different when you wrote that?
No, I just said to myself, okay, this is just – I looked at it from this perspective. I could make more of these if I want to, but this is just one issue, and I'm going to make it and see what happens. But if I want to make more, there's plenty of fairy tales to make jokes out of, and there's plenty of detective tropes to play up. And yeah, so I might make another one actually just for fun, just for the heck of it, because I like writing that story a lot, actually.
Good. Well, it's an interesting step. You've got plenty of fairy tales you can pick from. You don't necessarily have to do the same Three Pigs.
Yeah, one of my buddies was really into this idea, and he goes, "Oh, you should do one with Sleeping Beauty, but the joke is she's insomniac." just randomly, I'm like, "That's a great, funny idea." And he goes, "Yeah, you could have a whole scene where criminals are chasing her down and." You know, Rock's carrying her and she falls asleep in her arms and he's just constantly falling asleep in the middle of everything. I'm like, that's hilarious. That's such a fun. You know, there's so many ways to play with that.
You have to give that guy credit if you do that story.
That's true, actually. No, I'm going to take it all for myself. My idea. I was joking on the podcast.
See, that's what you can do it every, you know, if you did it once a quarter or something like that, you could do something.
True.
Like that. We talked about, you know, you could cater your thing as we talked about with holidays and stuff like that. You could do a Christmas story with Santa Claus.
That's right. That is a very good idea. So actually, you know, that is a very good idea. I should seriously consider doing that.
Because, you know, if you've got to plan ahead for this, of course, you know, it's almost too late to do a Christmas story. But you could, you know, the important thing would be to time it and so that it hits right in the middle of something. If you're late, though, you're dead. Don't turn out a book late.
True. That's true. So next Christmas, maybe.
That's right.
Fairy Tales Christmas Story.
Because this Grant Morrison did a book called Claus, and it came out after Christmas. And I was like, I'll buy it. I'm happy. It was a miniseries, and it started during the Christmas season, but the ending happened in like April. And I remember thinking, I wonder how many people have hung on this long.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate. There are so many convenient distractions. There's Facebook. There's lots of things that are going to distract your attention. And
not only that, your Christmas is long past. You know, you're into the spring, and then here you are still buying a Christmas story. So I think you got to plan these things out ahead. You'd be better to have like your single issue stories come out. Make sure it's out in plenty of time. You know, even if it came out around Thanksgiving for a Christmas story, you'd be better off than being late.
Totally true.
So anyway, say the name of the book again.
Hard Tales, Three Pigs in a Blanket.
Okay, and this is again from Fright Comics, right?
That's it.
That's your company, Fright Comics. And the website for Fright Comics, before I forget.
It's frightcomics.com.
Okay.
On that website, you can actually buy physical copies of books. If you want to own a physical copy, you can get one off of there. I'll mail it to you. So, yeah, I mean, some people occasionally, you know, say, hey, you know, I like this book, but I want a physical one too. Okie doke. we can accommodate. That's no problem.
So do you get it done like a Kablam or one of those?
Yeah. I actually forgot the printer I use, but they're really good. I don't remember their name, but it's not Kablam. It's somebody else. I forget.
There's several of them around, so it doesn't matter. It usually doesn't say, unless you have to the back page. Sometimes they want you to do a full page ad for their company.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a good thing. It's a good story. I really liked it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think that it could be the start of something else for you to keep yourself busy with.
We'll see.
Which is good stuff. Now, you were telling me about another book. Talk to me about this other one that you let me have a look at some of the pages of.
Oh yeah. That's an exciting thing. So I'm working with Gary Wolf right now. Mm-hmm. He's the author who created Roger Rabbit. Mm-hmm. And I'm helping turn his first novel into a comic. So we're just kind of putting it together right now, and the artwork is fantastic. It's done by Giancarlo Caracuzzo. I hope I pronounced his last name right and remembered it right. He's an Italian comic book artist. He's worked at Marvel and DC. He's a ton of experience. He's a fantastic artist. And basically, Killer Bowl is kind of about – I just kind of think of it – I explain it to people like this. Imagine a dystopian future where everybody's favorite, you know, form of entertainment is watching people play football, but instead of playing in a field, they play in the city – of wherever they're playing. So if it's New York, they're playing in the streets of New York City. Mm-hmm. And the players are allowed to kill each other. Mm-hmm. And they have to play for 24 hours straight. Mm-hmm. So the game either ends on, you know, the other team has more points, or all the other players are dead or taken out of commission.
Wow.
And when I read the novel, it's handled in such an interesting way where you as the reader are engaged with the story because it's a good story, but it presents all of these kind of horrific things mm-hmm. as normal. Mm-hmm. It just normalizes something that you know is terrible, mm-hmm. right? Just, oh, somebody got murdered, and then they dropped the ball, and then this happened. There's a certain sense of, I don't even know how to describe it, where as if, I can't find the word for it, but it's kind of almost commenting on how this is really messed up, but it's normalized now. And there's something kind of almost uncomfortable about that for a reader. And also, you know, you feel weird because you enjoy it, right?
Right.
You want it. It is entertaining to you. And it's almost commenting on human nature, how this is what we like, right? Yeah. Whether we want to admit it or not.
Right.
And then the story itself is actually very good. So that's just kind of the you know, very short idea. But the story itself is very good. The main character is kind of an older quarterback. He's like a veteran in the industry, but you know, he's not as young as the other players. Mm-hmm. So there's always this kind of risk of him getting murdered as he's playing. Mm-hmm. And then furthermore, he's been around for a while. So he's killed other people, and people who were his teammates once were murdered while he was playing. I don't want to use the word murder. They were mm-hmm. killed. It's not a murder. You're allowed to kill each other. Mm-hmm. And what makes the book very interesting too is the rules of the story. So for example, the players on the field are allowed to have knives and bats. But every team has one player called a hidden safety. The hidden safety is allowed to hide anywhere in the city, and they have a rifle with one bullet, and they're allowed to kill anybody, whether or not, you know, they have the ball, I believe. No, I think they have to kill the player with the ball, but they can hide anywhere and go anywhere. So it adds this interesting element of there's basically an assassin floating around the field. It's just great. It's just a great story. I remember when I was talking to Gary Wolf, and he was showing it to me, and when I read the book, I said, this definitely should be a comic. There's no question this should be a comic. Mm-hmm. And actually, he's in the process of pitching it to movie studios. Mm. That's how the whole thing happened, was I started correspondence with him because I really like his work. Mm-hmm. And I showed him my work, and then he showed me, you know, he said, hey, I was wondering if you'd be interested in turning this book into a comic because it would make it easier for me to sell it to movie studios. Mm-hmm. And I said, sure. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we're off to the races from there. So it's a very exciting project to get to work on, and it's also very kind of new for me to work on a story that I didn't come up with mm-hmm. and adapt it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Gary Wolf and I are writing it together. So what's really nice is that I feel like him kind of there helps me with any decisions I'm going to make. He kind of takes a little bit of the work off my shoulders, mm-hmm. which is nice. Mm-hmm. So I'll just go, this is a good story. This is a good – sometimes all I'm doing is figuring out how to put it together to make it look really good in a comic. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's exciting. I don't know when that's going to come out, but it's in production, and I haven't really talked to anybody about it. So I guess this is the first time anybody who's interested.
Killer Bowl is called?
Killer Bowl. Yeah, it's a great novel, actually. If anyone wants to read it, you just should read that book. If you heard me talk about it and you said, that sounds awesome, buy the book. The book's only, I think, 150 pages long. It's not very long. So, wow. And it's just fantastic. And it's so gritty and it's got such a nice – the book was written in the 70s, so it has such a rough 70s feel to it, which I love. Like something like The Warriors and that kind of stuff. Oh, it's just great. It's just great. I'm really happy to get to work on it.
So is this going to be like a mini-series, a single issue? A mini-series.
So probably we're shooting for 3 to 4.
3 to 4, okay.
That's the goal.
Through Fright Comics?
I don't know. We'll see. Okay. At this point, I really don't know. I could be through Fright, could be through somebody else. I mean, we're gonna figure that one out.
Mm-hmm. Who's doing the art on it?
Giancarlo, and I think his last name is Caracuzzo.
Okay.
But yes, yeah, Giancarlo Caracuzzo, who's a fantastic artist. He's worked at Marvel and DC. He's done a lot of good independent stuff. I mean, I'm actually really happy to get to work with him. And he actually does work on Captives eventually. That's how I started working with him. I followed his work on Facebook and I just loved it. And then, you know, one day I said to him, hey, you know, so basically what happened was Robert wanted to start working on something else. And that's probably the next thing we'll talk about. Mm-hmm. So what happened was, I went up to Giancarlo, I showed him Captives, and I said, hey, would you be interested in working on this? And he said, yeah, this looks great. And then we worked on Captives a little bit together, and then I started talking to Gary Wolf about Killer Bowl, and I said, actually Robert was originally going to draw it, but he didn't have the time to finish it. So I said, okay, that's all right. And I still want to get him on that book on some level, but I came up to Giancarlo, and he came on, and he just did an excellent job. He's a fantastic comic book artist. It's actually really exciting to get to work with him on this too, because he has so much experience and he just knows what he's doing. And it's just a really good project. I really do need to get those pages out there so people can see them, but I've really been keeping them kind of quiet. So
Well, I can understand that. You don't want to spill the beans too soon.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting for me. I like to talk about it with people in my personal life, but I found publicly I've been very hush hush about it.
Well, you know, like I said, I've seen the pages you're talking about, and you know, I won't share them with anybody because I want this to have a big impact when it hits, but I keep thinking about how timing, you know, we were talking about timing and holidays and stuff. This is a great time to do this book because people are talking about football and, you know, head injuries and things like that and stuff like that. And this is, if you follow football's natural progression, this is in the future of football, in my opinion.
That's where we're going, right?
And so this book is timed perfectly. This is a, you know, a time to do it because you're going to get people who are already talking about football to take a glance at what we could be seeing, you know, before
long. What's even wilder in the book is not only there is all that other crazy stuff I talked about. The players also take drugs before they go out in the field. So they're all on speed and like special versions of drugs to make them play more aggressively. So you have all these people kind of popping pills. That's actually a scene in the book where they're leaving the locker room and there's a big bowl of like pills. And there's people just taking them and putting them in their mouths and they go out there. And it's wild. And all the players are very heavily armored. So they'll wrap them in kind of like, I think it's called, it's like tape, but it's metal. So they'll wrap their body in that and they put all the armor on top of that. Because they play for a day straight. The quarters are broken up into 6 hours. Wow. So they'll play for 6 hours and there's a break. They play for another 6 hours. It's crazy. It is such a crazy novel. And I can't believe that one, it's not already a movie. Yeah. And two, that I never knew about it until recently. So it's exciting. Yeah, it's great.
This was written in the 70s?
76, I think.
Wow, because that's because you know football at that time was not what it is now, and you know, it was so prescient, what I'd call it. You know, it foretold the future on so many levels.
Totally right. Sometimes you're just kind of ahead. You see where things are. You see the natural progression of something.
Wow. Well, good for him, boy. That's pretty. Of course, Roger Rabbit was that way too. I mean, Roger Rabbit.
I honestly tell people like, just check out Gary Wolf's work as a writer. That's how I started a correspondence with him in the first place. He's just a great writer. So I'm very excited to get to work with him in the first place. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's talking about. Check out his work and definitely read Killer Bowl. You can get it on Kindle for nothing, like $2 or $3. It's really cheap.
Now, I've got to ask, of course, timing, like we've talked about, the best time for this to come out would be like in the preseason of football or something. I mean, do you have an estimate as to when this is going to happen? Is that what you're thinking, or are you going to do something?
I I don't know. That's a big. I'm not sure.
It's going to depend on when it's done.
We're going to have to see when it's done and where we go from there. But yeah, that'd be great.
If you can, I would do preseason or early football season would be the time to release that. That would be. That's a suggestion. You know, you do what.
No, I'm. You know what you're talking about. I'm gonna take your word for it.
That would be an excellent thing. You know, every once in a while they've tried to do a winter football after NFL football league, and it never seems to fly. You know, yeah. I can't remember the name of it. The stadium, what is it? Starts with an A. It's arena football. That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
And they try to do that, and never takes off because you know it's just not as interesting as the other. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to reading this because wow, it sounds like it was way ahead of its time.
Oh, it's just fantastic. It's a thing I'm very excited to get to work on. Again, you know, you get opportunities like this in life sometimes. You just have to run with them.
Well, I have to say, when I watched the Roger Rabbit movie, and when we found out who was behind everything, and it gets squashed by this thing,
yep.
I remember my jaw hitting the floor. I remember sitting.
You should read the novel.
Oh, really? Oh, my gosh.
Read the novel it's based on. It's actually pretty different. It's similar in a lot of ways, but it's pretty different. And I remember reading the novel and thinking, I actually like this better than the movie.
Wow. Wow. That was a great movie, I have to tell you.
Oh, yeah, it was fantastic. I don't think anybody's arguing that.
When he came out from under it, I remember just gasping and going like, oh, my gosh.
And story about Roger Rabbit. So part of the reason why the movie came out the way it did, especially with Jessica Rabbit being so, I don't know, the way she looks, right?
Yeah.
Disney was very against it.
Really?
However, they were very against it. This is the story I heard. Mm-hmm. They were very against it, but I guess whoever made the contract, I forgot who the director was. Was it Robert Zemeckis? I don't remember the director.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so basically he had final cut. Mm-hmm. So because the director had final cut, they had to let him do it. They didn't have a choice. But if it was up to them, that movie would have been heavily edited and censored. Because let's be real, it's not for kids.
No.
That is not a kid's movie. Kids love it, but it's not a kid's movie.
Yeah, oh no. I just, because, you know, the great thing about the movies, you get to see Disney and Warner Brothers cartoons characters together, which we had never seen before.
Yep.
You know, there's Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse floating down to the ground or falling to the ground. And I remember sitting there going like, I don't think I'm ever going to see this again in my lifetime. I said, this is amazing.
Oh, yeah. And also a funny story about that. I think it was Warner Brothers, maybe one of the two, either Disney or Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. They basically said, look, if you want my characters to be in this movie, they have to have the same amount of screen time as the other characters. That's why you'll see Mickey and Bugs falling at the same time. So they have the same amount of screen time. And then Daffy Duck and Donald Duck playing dueling pianos or whatever.
Right.
Same amount of screen time.
Oh, wow. Well, I never knew that before. I never put that together. So when they do the Hard Tales Three Pigs movie, you're going to have to make sure everybody gets equal screen time in that.
Yeah, well, the Grimm brothers aren't. You know, I don't think they're going to come back and demand. I mean, we'll see. Maybe some long lost relatives.
That's right.
It's not the public domain. You have to do this.
The family. You know, I always think of like when Charles Schulz passed. The first thing the family did was do the very things he didn't want to have happen. Didn't want action figures. He didn't want all the merchandising. And so what did they immediately do? All that stuff started coming out. And I still bought it, but I remember thinking, Charles Schulz is somewhere spinning in his grave. I'm just sure he is, because, you know, that was what he didn't want to have happen.
Well, you know, when you're gone, right, what can you do? Yeah. You can't really control it.
Too true. Well, maybe the Three Pigs, this story, they'll start putting action figures of those guys out.
Rock Hammer action figure. There we go.
And when he's doing, you pull a thing and he says something different every time.
That's right. And then I can get now, I'll just segue into my Headless Horseman comic.
Okay. Let's get to that.
We were talking about Robert a little bit because he worked on Killer Bowl briefly and he might again.
Okay.
So Robert, the artist from Captives, and I were putting together a Headless Horseman book.
Yes.
And you read it, so you can kind of talk about it a little bit.
Yes. So let's talk about it. It's... See, I don't want to spoil stuff. This is one of those books.
Don't give away the ending.
Yeah, there's a big old hanging surprise at the end, and I it's hard to talk about this book because you're gonna.
I'll say this then. This is how I always describe this book. So basically, the book's not out yet. It's in production right now. The first issue is done. It's gonna probably be 3 to 4, maybe 5. We'll see. but a limited series, you know, a mini series. Mm-hmm. And it's the Headless Horseman meets the 80s mm-hmm. and meets the Salem Witch Trials. That's somehow they're all combined. And that's the story.
I liked it because it's the characters are really vibrant. I like them. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the 80s in video game parlors, and that's part of this story takes place in one of those. And so it was very reminiscent to me of that when I saw some of those things, you know, people playing video games. I used to go with a pocket full of quarters so I could keep putting them into the video game things. Of course, people today go like, what? What do you mean?
Also, Robert really liked the Captives Easter egg there.
Oh, yeah.
The video game he's playing is Captives. The video game. Robert was very, very happy. He was like, brilliant, great idea. Like, you can't lose. It's a funny idea.
Well, the thing of it is that it's a really interesting, it's a different story than you normally tell.
It is. Well, Robert had a lot of, Robert is the co-creator on that book. Mm-hmm. So he had a lot of ideas that he liked and ways, you know, he wanted to tell the story. And I put that into the book.
Right.
So I really like working with other people. Also, Champions of Earth, James Ricardo was the co-creator on that too. So I find when I work with different people, it brings out different sides of me as a writer. Mm-hmm. Same thing with Killer Bowl, just working with Gary Wolf. You know, it brings out other ways for me to tell a story, or I think about things in a different way. And Robert had a lot of feedback on that book, and I think it shows, because when you read it versus reading something like Captives, you'll see such a different style of storytelling.
But that's good. I mean, you know, and I have to tell you this, is that that's good for you, because not every writer can do that.
I try my best to be flexible. And not only that, I just feel like sometimes people see things you don't see.
Yeah.
You know, and I think as a writer, you have to do your best to try to do that, you know, because I might see things one way, but, you know, somebody else will say, hey, well, have you considered it from this angle? Mm-hmm. And then instead of immediately going, no, unless it's something I'm really opposed to, mm-hmm. I'll say, yeah, let's do that. Let's run with that. Let's see where that goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why this book is. This book is, like I said, there's 80s video games and stuff kind of involved with it. There are, of course, if it's called a Headless Horseman, you can be sure there's going to be a Headless Horseman somewhere in the book.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I love the look of it. Yes. Robert has... Oh, it looks great. He has this interesting two-color palette.
Yeah.
He only uses two colors at once, and he's got like a very nice Darwin Cook looking style. And it's just awesome. And it gives such – that's a great – I really do like that book. Not to kind of pat myself on the back so much, but I really like it.
Well, I like the choice. Like you said, normally you use black and white. This was where you differed it. Was it your choice to do that, or were the two of you together?
That was Robert.
That was Robert. Okay.
He said, look, I want the book to be in color, but I like the idea of doing it like this. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, go for it. If you want to color the book in only two colors. So, you know, and the colors change, I think, per scene. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it'll be like a hot pink and like a navy blue, and then it'll be something else. And it really does give the book an interesting look.
Yeah.
And I think just that combined with the setting and the way it's written. I tell people, you've never ever read a Headless Horseman comic like this. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
Never read one like this. Yeah. And even it's a bummer I've only sent you the first issue, because I mean the second issue is not done, but I know what happens in it, obviously. The origin story of the Headless Horseman in this comic, you would have never saw it coming. It's rooted in the Salem Witch Trials.
Yeah.
And it's rooted in actual historical figures from the Salem Witch Trials. So it's this kind of very fun reinvention of the Headless Horseman. But my biggest beef with the Headless Horseman has always been, most versions I've seen of the Headless Horseman, he's just this thing that kills people. There's not a person there. It's just a force. And I said, no, I always liked the Horseman. I like the idea of this being a person, an actual character, you know, not just some thing that kills people, right? So I really... The main character of the story is the Headless Horseman.
All right.
So, you know, it's a very kind of, I don't know, it's a fun book. I mean, he's not literally the main character. It gets complicated, but you'll see. It gets complicated, but
it's a great story though. I really enjoy the art. I enjoy the pacing of it. I think it's good. The different characters can. That's one of the things about your stories though, is that they're really good characters always. People that I can understand and relate to and figure out. And do stuff. And yet you've got surprises in there too, as far as characterization goes.
So I just think in life, I just talk so much to random people, and I tend to be very interested in what makes people tick. And this is kind of a funny character trait of mine as a person is I ask people a million questions when I can sit down and talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? Where do you like to hang out? Because I just think people in general are interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think everybody has different things that make them tick. And I find when I write stories, I approach it from that angle. Mm-hmm. Is yeah, maybe I wouldn't do this in this situation, but what if somebody else would? And
yeah.
I try very hard to write characters from the perspective of kind of not placing my own attitudes of the world onto how I portray them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a good example of a writer who did that very successfully was Alan Moore with the character of Rorschach.
Yeah.
So Alan Moore himself, I think he's quoted saying that he doesn't understand why Rorschach is so popular. Because he kind of said, you know, I think Rorschach is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't agree with Rorschach. I think Rorschach is nuts. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, yeah, but you're such a good writer that you didn't put those judgments in the story.
No.
You didn't portray him in a way that was, even if you thought the things he believed or his attitudes were not a good thing or you didn't agree with them, mm-hmm. you never portrayed the character like that because mm-hmm. he's just able to step away.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, if you write a character as a person,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's going to shine and you'll see it. That character is not a series of, I always hate when I see stories where it's so heavy-handed what the writer is trying to say through a character.
Yeah.
The character is not a person. It's a series of, you know, ideas.
Right.
It's not a person. It doesn't think like a person. It just says whatever the author believes is true.
Yeah.
And it just comes out of the character.
Mm-hmm. See, one of the things I have to congratulate Robert Kirkman for doing like is in like Walking Dead. Who's the guy with the baseball bat? His name just escapes me right at the moment.
Oh, I never got far enough into it, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah,
He's a very popular character.
I mean, he carries a baseball bat, and he takes that hot iron and puts it to people's faces. And he does all this kind of stuff, and people adore him. And I'm always like, I see people are cosplaying at cons, and I always go up to them and say, do you really like this character? I mean, you know, he's going around murdering people and stuff. But he does it so nicely, they say. And I'm always like, if he murders you nicely, that's all right?
the thing that's interesting is that when you kind of understand a character's point of view,
mm-hmm.
you begin to empathize with them.
Mm-hmm.
Even if, and that's why if you watch a movie like The Warriors,
mm-hmm.
they're a bunch of kids in a gang,
mm-hmm.
but you're in their gang now too as the viewer, right?
Right.
So that's kind of the interesting thing about writing stories is that I look at it as, you know, everybody in their, not everybody, but I think a lot of people in their personal life have friends that if they didn't know them, they probably wouldn't like them.
Mm-hmm.
But when you become friends with somebody and you get to know them, you become a little more forgiving or understanding of certain personality traits that they have
mm-hmm.
because they're your friend,
mm-hmm.
right? And when you come, you know, when you get into a story, in a weird way, you become that character's friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know their inner thoughts,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, like, you know, you know everything about this person.
Mm-hmm.
You know their background. You know their life if the character's developed well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because of that, it allows people to form an emotional connection with characters that – from an outside perspective, if you didn't know them,
yeah.
this is just some guy who murders people with a baseball bat.
Exactly. And he calls it Lucille of all things. And I'm going like, this man's nuts. And
right.
and there's all these, even women cosplay as him. And I'm always going, I look at them and I go, why? I don't get this. You know, he's a mean old nasty no good. And you know, but
people,
you know.
People love the Joker, right?
Yeah.
Love the Joker, right? Oh.
There's a lot of people who there are fans of the Joker. I mean, Batman has his fans, and the Joker has his fans.
Well, I also feel this way that I think people can live out kind of things that they find interesting that they wouldn't actually do in real life through fiction and
right.
through characters.
Right.
Yeah, maybe in real life I would never murder somebody violently with a baseball bat,
mm-hmm.
but that doesn't mean there aren't times that I would consider doing it. there aren't times where, you know, we've all been there before where somebody mm-hmm. drives you crazy and you're like, mm-hmm. you know, I would just love to smash that person's face in with a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to do it, of course,
mm-hmm.
but it's just that attitude of imagine a world where I was that person.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there's something that's fiction is an escape. That's
mm-hmm.
the whole point of it. And, you know, so that's, I think that's part of what it is. I think some people would love to actually be the Joker for a day,
yep.
even if, you know, they would never do it in real life.
Yep.
But to play make-believe and say, hey, wouldn't it be cool if I had some, you know, hot girlfriend and
mm-hmm.
face was painted green, white, and had green hair, and I, you know, had a flower that killed people or whatever.
Yeah, right.
So I buzzed, electrocuted people, and I laughed like Mark Hamill, you know, like
yeah.
if you could just have that for a moment.
My favorite line about the Joker in the Batman the Animated Series was Harley Quinn says, "You put the fun in funeral," she goes.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. I said, that's different. I haven't ever thought of that, but that's the kind of thing.
It's just, I think people in general are complex, you know, and just because I'm Joe the Mailman.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean sometimes Joe the Mailman's like, you know, wouldn't it be awesome to be that guy with the baseball bat and kill zombies and hit people who disrespect me? There's a certain... Yep. And that's the fun thing about stories. And I think that's also why people are so attracted to them.
Yeah.
Because we don't get to live lives like right? And honestly, if we did, we wouldn't enjoy it. Right? It'd be terrifying.
That's right.
But there's that joy of escapism through fiction. And I also think, and this is funny too, is that I don't know the character you refer. I know him, but I don't know anything about him.
Yeah.
I tend to write characters I feel that are not always the best people.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends the story I'm writing, but Captives is completely like that. Like a lot of the characters in Captives, I've had so many people tell me that Simon in Captives bothers them. He's the main character basically, or one of the main characters. And I'm saying to people, you're not supposed to like him. And they'll just go, well, then, you know, that's just weird to me. But I'm like, well, just give it a moment and go on the journey with him. And then you'll start to see, you know, because at the end of the day, he's a person, right? But what I was going to say was what I like to do, and you see it done very well in certain mangas I really like, like Hajime no Ippo and Berserk and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You can have a villain, but give a villain heroic traits.
Yes.
And now it puts a person in a weird place.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, the name of the character is Negan.
No, okay.
That's his name, N-E-G-A-N, Negan.
So I think of this all the time, that you'll often see in stories where, say for sake of argument, somebody's a villain, right?
Yeah.
But one thing people always tend to admire is people who are tough and brave.
Yeah.
And if you write a villain really well and they're tough and brave, even if that person's a monster, there's something you kind of like about that person, because deep down you admire that, and you want to be tough and brave at times too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's certain... It's a weird thing about the human condition where when you give villains heroic traits, they start to become popular. And I always felt like if you look at really old villains from, you know, old like radio dramas and old comic books, you'll notice that there's nothing likable about them usually, because the writer wants to make them unlikable. So it'll be, you know, a villain who's a coward, right? Mm-hmm. Like cowardly, and, you know, ties women to railroad tracks.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
You know, this kind of like, there's nothing about that person, and they're always like physically unattractive. Mm-hmm. You know, all these, there's nothing there, you know, all the things, they're just trying to throw everything at a person to say, hey, you're not supposed to root for this person. But then, you know, look at the character, I joke around, look at the guy who plays Loki in all those Avengers movies. Every girl loves him.
He's getting his own TV show, believe it or not.
Right. I'm not surprised. I'm like, okay, he's a good looking guy.
Yeah.
And to top it off, he's clever, he's charming, he's witty. So now people kind of go, well, maybe he's a bad guy, but he's got these other traits we like in people.
I saw that. I was stunned, because I, you know, Loki in the comics was a very different character than that actor.
Completely different.
Yeah. Then you made him a woman at one point. J. Michael Straczynski turned him into a female one time, and I was like, I don't think that works. But
you got to mix it up, right? You
know,
running out of, I mean, Thor was a frog, right? At one
point.
Wasn't he? The frog picked up the hammer, or was Thor a frog that picked up the hammer? I forget which one.
Thor was the frog. He got turned into a frog, and he was still able to pick up the hammer. It's like Spider-Man was a pig at one point.
Spider-Pig, that's right. Spider-Pig.
Spider-Ham. And that was, I just, you know, it's amazing the stories. That, you know, after decades of telling stories, you know, I'm not surprised that we kind of go these places.
I would go there all the time. If they ever were let me work in Marvel Comics, I'd be like, hey, guys, you know what would be cool? If Spider-Man had a car that had spider powers, and he lost his powers, now he has to drive the car. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like Knight Rider, but with a car that could drive up walls and shoot webs. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't that be fun?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody would say yes. I mean, some people would. But
all right. Well, let's wrap up the Headless Horseman stuff. Do you know any idea when that's going to hit the ground?
What I would like to do is probably have the last issue come out maybe next Halloween.
Yes. I was going to say Halloween is perfect for that.
Halloween. Yeah. So probably have the last issue out, or at least, you know, like maybe issue 2 or 3 come out on Halloween. So it would be nice to probably have the first issue out maybe sometime in the spring.
Yeah.
and then just kind of put them out from there. But yeah, and again, that'll be on Comixology, mm-hmm. definitely.
Good.
Yeah, that's going to be great. I'm really excited about that book. It's really good.
Yeah, I like what I've seen of it, and I'm really interested to see what happens because, again, it's well-written. It's got really interesting characters. Things happen that surprise me all the time, and it's really good. And the 80s right now is hot.
Well, I've been into the 80s since, like, 2005 or 6. Like, I tell people all the time that I still listen to 80s music regularly, like mm-hmm. every day. And then I listen to so much 80s music, I'm now starting listening to City Pop, which is Japanese 80s music. And that's getting popular on YouTube now. And then I used to listen to Italo Disco a lot, which is, you know, 80s music from Europe. And I still pretty much watch an 80s movie once a week.
Wow.
So when Robert said, hey, let's make it take place in the 80s, I went, yes. I still culturally live in the 80s. I'm watching Family Ties right now. You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because, you know, the Stranger Things was based in the 80s. The TV show that's on Netflix. And also there's a comic book that a friend of mine, James Hakey, does called The Mall that's based in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know that book. That's mm-hmm. Scout Comics.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I was going to pick that up because I saw the cover and I was like, that's an 80s book.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
There was a Zero issue that was out in a convention, and then Number One, I think, is coming out. So it's a good book. I've read several of the issues, and I really like it. So I highly recommend that. If you like the 80s, you're going to like that book.
I love the 80s. Love it.
All right. So let's recap. You got The Headless Horseman, and that's probably going to be next year sometimes. What's going to happen to that? Let's see. The other ones. Help me with this one. We got
We got Killer Bowl.
Killer Bowl, and that's
then
probably
next
year.
We got Captain's Issue 4 just came out.
Right.
That's out. And then got Hard Tales, Three Pigs in a Blanket. That's out.
That's out now. Yep. And then Champions of Earth.
Champions of Earth. And then you know what? Just to make it fun, I am working on another book right now with a buddy of mine who's an animator named Gabe Pinto.
Okay.
He actually drew a cover of Champions of Earth, actually.
Oh, cool.
And we're doing a book which is I can't announce it just yet, but it's another fun horror book.
Okay. So the thing we want to know is how do we keep up with you and follow things you're doing?
The best thing to keep up with me is one of two things. No, these things. Either A, go to Comixology and just go to my publishing page.
Mm-hmm.
And what's great is that if once you start buying my books on Comixology or you start checking my books out, they're going to be advertised to you when you're on Facebook.
Wow.
You'll just be minding your own business. And then, you know, because whenever I'm on Facebook now, I always get advertisements from Comixology because I buy a lot of stuff on Comixology.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do that, it'll be – I mean, whenever a new – like, so for the sake of argument, you buy Captain's Issue 3. Mm-hmm. What'll happen is when Captain's Issue 4 comes out, they'll tell you on Comixology.
Mm.
They'll say, oh, recommended this book, right? It'll pop up in some way, shape, or form. So if you just start checking my stuff out in Comixology, you'll be aware of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, another good way to keep up with me is just follow me on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
It's just my name. It's just it's my public profile. I post a lot of 80s stuff, so but if mm-hmm. whenever something new is going on in comics, I post it there.
Spell your last name again, would you?
It's B as in boy, A N C H I T T A. Just follow me on there, and then in addition to that, probably hopefully sometime this year or later in the year, I'm gonna start maybe making like a fan page for my comic stuff.
Cool.
And then kind of getting more into that side of social media that I've really not been too into. Mm-hmm. And then also always good to add yourself to my mailing list.
Okay. How do we do that?
You just go to frightcomics.com.
Mm-hmm.
If you just send me an email, I'll add you to the mailing list.
Cool.
So yeah, or if you buy anything on that website, there's a little click there to add yourself to the mailing list too.
Well, if you like creative stuff and you're interested in the stories that you haven't read before and different takes on stuff, I highly recommend you keep up with this guy's stuff because I'm always surprised by what you're going to do, and yet I'm always engrossed in the characters and just fascinated to see what you're going to do next because I don't know what you're going to do next, and I've read comics for a while. So
That makes me very happy. That's exactly what I want to hear. That's what I go for as a writer is I want to keep people on their toes, and I want you to kind of never be 100% comfortable. You know where things are going.
Yep. Champions of Earth was a perfect example of that. So the title mm-hmm. right away threw me on a different direction. And then when I got into the book, I was like, oh, this isn't quite what I expected. All right. So it's a good thing, Alex, you're doing terrific stuff. I really love it. I'm so glad you're getting to do more of it.
And
you've got good things going. We'll have to talk again sometime in the near future when other things.
Well, I'd love to. I love your podcast. And all your listeners, you're so lucky to be listening to this podcast. This is a great comic book podcast. So you should all be pumped. You know what you're talking about. You, sir, know what you're talking about. You got a good show. You really do.
Well, thank you so much. I'm always trying to make it that people can find out about stuff that they should know about that they may not. And also get them to appreciate the books that they read more, because there's things behind the scenes that help you understand how good the book is, like the Captives allusion in that book. I mean, that's something that people may not recognize if they haven't read Captives yet. You want to be able to look for those kinds of things. So I'm always trying to make that
reference from Headless. That's a funny one. Yeah.
I'm always trying to make it that you get more out of your comics and that you find things that maybe you didn't get a chance to find. I'm always, when I go to comic conventions, that's what I'm doing. I'm looking for new books that I haven't read before. And if I really like them, I'm going to try to tell them. That's how I met you. We were across the aisle from each other at a comic convention.
You were the first person to ever buy a book from me at a show.
Oh, wow.
I remember you just – it was before the door even opened,
right? That's
right. You just rolled up to me and you said – you looked at my books. You said, yes.
Yeah,
you just bought them.
Because I was fascinated by the look of them and what you were going to do. And then when I got to start reading them, I was like, whoa, this is not what I expected. You know, I love it when somebody takes me somewhere I haven't been before and goes where I'm surprised that they're going in a good way.
Yeah, no, it's something I strive for, so I'm going to keep trying my best to do it well. I'm happy it's working.
Well, Alex,
I'm pumped to have so much kind of in production. It's exciting.
I'm happy for you, because I'm also happy for me, because I'm going to get to read all these good things. Which is
good. That's right.
And
as
soon as we get done here, I'm going to be reading Champions of Earth number 4, which I didn't read yet. I'm so anxious to get to, and I can't wait for people to get your stuff. Alex, just – man, keep it up. I'm really happy that things are going well and there's more of your work coming out that we can enjoy.
Yeah, thank you very much. And always happy to come back. Really good show.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when it's landmark episode 350 with a very special guest, someone I'm sure you're going to enjoy listening to. But until then, keep reading your comics.